I'm so nervous I didn't even notice you there. I'm on my way to Simon the Pharisee's house. Would you mind if I just waited here with you for a few minutes? Jesus is there at Simon's house, and I so need to see him. But it's not easy to just go walking into a Pharisee's house and do what I'm about to do, so if I could just stay here. Jesus, I have this plan, you see. I need to see Jesus. Martha's there. Martha, my sister, she was asked to help with the meal preparations. Martha's always asked to help with the meal preparations. She's efficient and organized and respected. Oh, Martha's just all the things I'm not. My life is a mess. It's not just me saying that. You could ask anyone around here. They'd agree. They know what kind of a life I've led. Kind of like that time with my brother. I'm sure you heard about my brother, Lazarus. Probably everybody from Roman back has heard about my brother, Lazarus, and what happened. He got sick. He got terribly sick. And his fever, his body was raging. He's mumbling. We didn't know what to do. We were scared. And so we called for the doctor. Doctors know what to do with these things. And the doctor came, and the doctor tried to help. He honestly did. But my brother kept getting worse. We didn't know what to do. And so we thought, we'll call for Jesus. Jesus, he heals people. He touches people. He reaches out. And lame people can walk again, and blind people can see, and he doesn't even know these people. And he helps them and he heals them. Surely Jesus could help Lazarus, his friend. His friend. So we sent for Jesus, and he didn't come. And we waited, and he didn't come. And at first I was confused, and I thought, why? Why doesn't Jesus come? This is his friend Lazarus. We need him. What would Mary and Martha, what would we do without him? And he didn't come. Lazarus kept getting worse. And then my confusion turned to anger. And I thought, why isn't he here? What could be keeping him? What could be more important than my brother to Jesus? And Lazarus, he kept getting worse. His fever got worse. He was mumbling and incoherent, and we didn't know what to do. And there was no sign of Jesus. And then his body that was so hot went cold. And all those mumblings and groanings and the noises he was making, and they went silent. So we anointed his body with perfume like this. And we wrapped him up. And we laid him in the tomb. And it was so hard for Martha and I, two women, alone. What were we going to do without our brother? And then, 4 days. 4 days after my brother dies, who should show up? But Jesus. Oh, I was mad. I was so mad. He finally shows up. Well, Martha's the proper one. Martha went out and greeted him the way you're supposed to, you know. I wasn't going to be proper. I wasn't going to be nice. I was mad. But then Martha came back in. She said that Jesus was calling me by name. He wanted to see me. Well, when Jesus calls you by name, no matter how angry you are, you go. I went out. I wasn't going to be nice about it. No way. I was going to tell Jesus exactly how I felt, and that's exactly what I did. I walked out there, and I said, Jesus, if you had been here, my brother wouldn't have died. I don't know what I thought Jesus was going to do. You never really know what Jesus is going to do. I thought maybe he'd get mad back at me. Most men would have. But he didn't. He just looked down at me. And his eyes were filled with this compassion. This compassion and love. He looked at me and we started walking, talking, weeping together. Pretty soon we were at the tomb. And then Jesus started acting really strange. And he asked them to open the tomb. Well, we tried to tell him this was not going to be a good idea. It wasn't going to smell good. It'd been 4 days. And he insisted. So there were some men there, and they opened the tomb. And then Jesus, he raised his hands, and he looked up at heaven, and he started to pray. Oh, I love listening to Jesus pray. Nobody prays like Jesus. I don't understand a lot of what he says, but it's just such an amazing thing to listen to Jesus pray. And then he calls out in this loud voice, and he says, "Lazarus, come out." You know, like he's just in there taking a nap or something. "Come out." Well, you know, when Jesus calls you by name, even if you're dead, you go to him. My brother came out. What a moment that was. My brother came out. And instead of the smell, that awful smell of death and rotting that we expected, it was the smell of this sweet perfume coming out. It was a time of, started out in such sadness and turned into this moment of life, this moment of victory. I will never forget how I felt when I saw my brother walking toward me, Jesus standing beside me. What a moment. So I've been thinking, how can I thank Jesus for that moment? How can I express my feelings at that time? My family, we're comfortable, but we're not, you know, really well off like some of those Pharisees. I'm just a woman. I don't have any kind of power, influence. There's nothing I can do. But this perfume, this is the most valuable thing I own. I thought about taking it, selling it, giving the money to the poor. Jesus talks about that. It seemed like a good idea. It just didn't seem right somehow. And I thought, you know, I could walk in and I could present it to Jesus and he could do whatever he wanted with it. I'd make some kind of a fine speech and that would be it. I'm not much of a speech giver. That's more Martha's expertise, and I don't know, again, it just didn't seem right. I just kept thinking about that moment when my brother came out of that tomb. That smell, the sweet perfume, that moment of life and of victory. There's rumors going around town. I'm kind of scared. The Sanhedrin wants to see Jesus, and that's never a good thing. I don't know what they want. And Jesus isn't one to hide. Even if he wanted to, where could he go? There's always crowds of people around him. It's not like he could get away. To make things worse, Jesus has been talking about his own death more and more. It scares me. It scares me a lot. I don't know what's going to happen. So I have this perfume. And I'm going to go in there, into Simon's house. And I'm going to anoint him with this perfume. I don't know, maybe I'm sort of getting him ready for when he, if he dies. But whether he does or whether he doesn't, everywhere he goes, people will smell this sweet perfume, this smell of life, this smell of victory. And that's what I want. Everywhere he goes, I want people to see the victory that I saw. You're probably think I'm crazy. Martha would say I'm crazy. But it all makes sense in my head. This is what I'm going to do. This is where I'm headed. Thank you for listening to me. I feel a lot braver now. And may God cause his face to shine upon thee today. Today's Alabaster Sunday, and we're going to be taking our offering here. But before we do anything, I need to give credit where credit is due. That monologue was written by Jamie Wright, and it was performed at General Assembly. Our pastor saw it there, and he thought it would be this wonderful idea if I would do this. If you are a visitor to our church, this is not our normal way of doing things. Please come back. But it was just sort of something different and a way to promote Alabaster. If you're not familiar with Alabaster offerings provide money, obviously, for building projects throughout the Church of the Nazarene all around the world. This includes churches, medical clinics, schools, district centers, and anything that we need. We purchase land, anything that has to do with any of that is paid for oftentimes through our Alabaster offerings. The church is made up of people. We know that. You don't need a building to have a church. The church is the people of God coming together. And the buildings really aren't the most important thing about the church. However, they are in many ways necessary. And when the church comes into a community and builds a building, it shows a sign of permanence to the people there, a sign that this church is here and they're going to stay. They've built this permanent structure. And then a lot of times, I know when we built the church in Suriname, it was a great way for the people in that community to see this church is part of a much bigger picture. It's not just this building, but this building represents the world and people around the world caring for and praying for the people meeting in this building. And that's why Alabaster is so important. If you are a facts and figures kind of person, here's some statistics for you. Alabaster was started in 1949, and September 16th, 2012 was a big moment in Alabaster history. We reached $100 million in giving. Kind of an exciting moment. These numbers are sort of, I rounded to make it easy. So far, since 1949, we have completed somewhere over 8,900 different projects through Alabaster Giving. We have around 4,100 churches and chapels that have been built, over 400 Bible schools and other school buildings, over 600 mission and district centers, over 40 hospitals and clinics, and sometimes we buy land with the hopes that we will be able to build on it. And so Alabaster has purchased over 1,600 plots of land for future building sites. And then there's over 650 other building and land type things. You know, it breaks down and gets a little more specific. But a whole bunch of other projects that we've done. 80% of your Alabaster offering goes to the Africa, Asia Pacific, Eurasia, Mesoamerica, and South America regions. Okay, 80% goes there. 20% is given to the USA and Canada region. So it kind of split it up around the world. Absolutely, positively, no Alabaster funds go to administrative costs or anything like that. That's covered by your World Evangelism Fund giving. So when you give to Faith Promise or just missions in general, that covers all the administration so that when we have these offerings, they can go completely to the buildings and the land. So those are some statistics. If you are a story kind of person, here are some stories. The first one is in Haiti, Port-au-Prince. Pastor Nelson Sadrach has a neat story here. His people understood that you can't just sit and wait for others to come and help you. You need to do something yourself. And they knew that if they wanted a church building, they needed to do something to get a church building. And so they came up with this plan, and they said every Sunday they would have a building fund offering. And anybody who wanted to bring an extra offering, an extra gift for this, could do so. And they would collect this building money for their own church. And the people embraced this project, and they brought their offerings. And in less than 2 years, they had purchased a property and had begun constructing a new church building on that property. And they were excited about this, and it was going well. But they met and they talked about things, and they said, you know, as important as our church is to us, and as important as a building is to us, there's a higher calling here. And they decided to stop collecting the building fund offerings and instead start collecting a mission project offering. And they had a plan for going into another area, and there wasn't a church established there at all, and they wanted to start a mission outreach in this other area. And so they started collecting money for this. They decided that it would be hard for them to worship without completing their building, but it would be impossible to maintain their mission mindset without doing this project. And they knew that missions was the core of the church and that this should have a higher priority. And so they put their whole building thing on hold and gave to this mission. The mission was a great success, and they were able to do wonderful things, and it was exciting. And then they came together for their fourth anniversary of their church. It was this big celebration. You know, their church wasn't done yet, but that was okay, and they had this mission project, and they were excited about this. And during the fourth anniversary, they found out that they had received a gift of $10,000 in alabaster money so that they could finish their church. And what a testimony this was to them, knowing that when they put their priorities right before God and focused on other people instead of on themselves, that God would bless that. And so they were able to have the blessing of this mission project as well as the blessing of being able to finish their church because of the alabaster offerings that people are giving around the world. In Rio de Janeiro, there's the Nilopolis Church, and they're building a new church. This new church is still under construction, but they're using it because the church has grown so big. They are up to 2,000 people in their church. Their sanctuary will seat 2,000 people. I don't know how many services they have or anything like that, but this is a huge, huge, vibrant church that started out with incredibly humble beginnings. It started out as a house church. People met in a home. They outgrew the home. They moved to a school, had church services in the school, outgrew the school, and because of alabaster, they were able to build their own sanctuary and their own church. They stayed in this sanctuary for about 40 years, and while they were in their alabaster church, their sanctuary there, they again had this mission vision. The Nilopolis Church planted 30 other churches in the Rio de Janeiro area, and then a whole bunch outside that area. And through this time, as they were planting all these churches, they were giving to alabaster offering because they were sitting in their alabaster church. They knew the importance of the alabaster offering. They also started a Christian elementary school so that if you can pay for education or if you cannot pay for education, you can come to this elementary school and receive this Christian elementary education. They also sponsored some national missionaries that went out to other areas in Brazil And then they started sponsoring some missionaries, national missionaries that went out outside of Brazil. And their church has grown and grown and grown. And God has blessed this church with this humble beginning of meeting in a home and then having an alabaster church. And like I said, now that they're in the middle of this building program for a sanctuary to seat 2,000, God has blessed this church in mighty ways. And it is exciting. In the Africa region, education is vital. And there are seminaries there, different seminaries, and leaders can come to these seminaries and go through these classes. And what they're supposed to do, they come, they learn, and then they go back to their own people, and they reteach those classes on a more local level. And that way, the education can spread, and the people that can't travel to the seminaries can still get this valuable education. This means that the doctrine can stay pure as well as it funnels down through. The local pastors can learn in their local languages, whereas if they had gone to the seminary, they wouldn't be able to do that. And everybody has access to this education. And it is a great system, and it works in Africa. The problem is teaching space. You need somewhere to hold these local schools. And the churches in this area of Africa, this is the Horn of Africa field, they're responsible for building their own churches. They get no alabaster money whatsoever when they build a church. Each congregation is responsible to raise the money. They volunteer the labor. Whatever it takes to build a new church, they do themselves. But it's difficult for them to have additional finances and hours to build an education center. And so that's when Alabaster comes in. And they're building these regional centers, these educational centers, in these areas. All of the churches are helping. And I think this is neat. The community comes together. Some things are donated. Hours are donated. Materials are donated. Alabaster funds are used, but when it's used in conjunction with all these donations, it means that the dollars can be spread a lot farther, and we can do a lot more. It also means that the local people have an investment in that building, and so they have a desire to keep it up and to maintain it and to see that it's used properly. They have this investment in it. One example, they constructed the Ethiopia Banzabona District Educational Building, Training Center, and they did it in phases, to kind of help facilitate things. So in the first phase, they built two rooms. One is the district office and the pastor's library, and they can use this for training space as well. The second phase I thought was kind of interesting. The second phase, they put a fence around the property, and they planted coffee and eucalyptus trees in this land that they had that wasn't used. And I'm guessing then that they're harvesting the coffee and selling it. But they planted these trees. And then the next phase, they're looking at putting up another building for pastors in training, for additional classroom space, for additional storage. And they also want to start a school for the children in the community so that the children can come there and, again, receive a good Christian education. These training centers are so vital in the Horn of Africa. They encourage leaders by giving them a place to come and learn, giving them a place where they can just soak in the doctrine of the Church of the Nazarene. They're also important because it builds on the cooperation between the community and the church in these building programs. The morale that this builds, this partnership. And in addition to all of that, the church leaders gain construction knowledge, as they're right there on the construction site helping to build these churches. They gain this experience and the camaraderie. And it shows when you're blending these alabaster funds that have been collected from around the world and bringing it to these local communities, again, just the bonding between these two. This is such a wonderful thing to see that you're part of such a big picture and that God's at work all around the world. The last story I have for you comes from the Democratic Republic of the Congo. They want to build a building, but right now they have used the alabaster offerings to purchase land. And this has been an ongoing desire to be able to do this. And purchasing this land was the first step. So they were able to purchase this land for their district center. They have some quotes here from the district superintendent. I'm not even going to try to pronounce his name. But he says, "This involved many years of praying and waiting on the Lord to open the door to this wonderful site." And I know some of you can understand many years of praying and waiting on the Lord. Praying and waiting on the Lord. "We believe that God is the controller of time and circumstances. The new center will be used for training, for meetings, assemblies, and until then, they have this land, and they didn't want the land to just sit there, not producing anything. And so the pastors, all the local pastors and some of the local people have come together, and they've planted sweet potatoes and soya beans on this land so that it can start producing things until it can start producing training facilities. They'll plant sweet potatoes until they can plant buildings. The district superintendent says, "We thank all the leaders who are mobilizing the church members to give for the alabaster funds. You have blessed many communities and contributed to the salvation of many souls. Praise be to God." When we take our offering this morning, it's such a big picture. And God is using these funds around the world and in so many different ways. He's finding miraculous ways to stretch the funds. He is doing incredible things through our offering. And so this morning we're going to take our alabaster offering. And if you would be willing to give, we'll have a word of prayer come up. And thank you, Shauna. Shauna can play. Put your donation in the box. If you have a check and you'd like to donate by check, make that check out to the Mifflinburg Church of the Nazarene. If you're sitting there saying, "Oh, I forgot this was Alabaster Sunday," it's all right. You can give next week if you would like to. You can either use the blue and white envelopes in the pews and just write on there Alabaster, or if you use the white tithing envelopes, that special offering line, you can just write in there Alabaster and put your offering in that way. So, if you would like to play, and if you would like to bring your offering up to the church, then we'll have a word of prayer, and you will be dismissed. So, thank you.